We live in a world governed by laws and principles, many of which we know in full and many of which we only know in part. Earlier in this session, I said that the laws of cause and effect, action and reaction, sowing and reaping, rule the world, and that there are no accidents. Success or failure happen for specific reasons. There are causes for every effect, even if we don't know exactly what those causes are. And we have to assume, on the basis of our experience and intuition, that these laws are largely true in that they have high predictive value. You can pretty much determine what's going to happen in any situation by applying the laws and principles that I've discussed. When a person and his activities are in harmony with these laws, he can be largely assured of success in whatever he attempts. However, if anyone tries to achieve anything in violation of these laws, failure is likely to follow. This brings us to the conclusion that luck is not an accident either. It's also subject to the law of cause and effect, and to many other laws as well. Luck is largely predictable, even if not specifically so, and it can be increased in your life if you understand it better. You can, in effect, become a very lucky person. Luck seems to be mentioned and associated with almost every great success. People are always claiming to have been lucky or being accused of being lucky when they achieve something out of the ordinary. However, when athletes win great competitions or musicians rise to the top of their fields and make large sums of money, or when a craftsman builds a fine piece of furniture or a house, or a doctor achieves a brilliant medical success, or a lawyer achieves a great legal victory, the word luck is seldom, if ever, used. Why is this so? The answer is, of course, that we attributed these successes to visible, predictable activities, especially to hard work, preparation, and full utilization of the individual's natural talents. We ascribe success in these competitive arenas to the education, experience, training, and application of the individual, but we seldom accuse the person of having merely been lucky. Luck is a word that people usually use to describe things that happen that they don't understand and can't explain. You, like everyone else, have a strong need to make sense of your life and what is going on around you. Psychologists call this a need for a sense of coherence or an understanding of how things hang together. When this sense of coherence is threatened by things that seem to happen by chance, either positive or negative, we reassert mental order and peace of mind by writing it off to luck of some kind. Once you can say, he or she was just lucky, or I just got a lucky break, it gives you a sense of comfort and security and enables you to stop thinking about how and why a particular thing happened, even though it might have been a remarkable coincidence. Interestingly enough, successful people have a tendency to both feel lucky and to be lucky, and they often attribute their successes to luck. Sometimes successful people say this to avoid the envy attached to high achievement. They claim that they were just lucky so that they appear humble and ordinary in the eyes of others. Unsuccessful people, on the other hand, attribute much of the success of others to their being lucky rather than to their being talented. At the same time, they blame most of their own failures on bad luck, as though the law of cause and effect had somehow been suspended in their cases, thereby making them the unfortunate and undeserving victims of chance. Deep in their hearts, most successful people attribute their achievements to hard work far beyond the ordinary. They say things like, "The harder I work, the luckier I get." They believe that they have earned their success and that they deserve the occasional lucky break that seems to pop up and propel them forward far faster than the ordinary. The fact is, your luck can be managed and increased by applying certain mental and physical laws that apply to luck in your own life. What you're about to learn about luck and success could change your future. There are 12 laws of luck which, in conjunction with the other laws you've learned in this program, can help you to accomplish more in a shorter period of time than perhaps you ever thought possible. The first law of luck is the law of probability. This law says that there is a mathematical probability of the occurrence of any event which can be deduced with considerable accuracy from observation, measurement, and experience. I personally have taken graduate courses in probability theory and statistics. There's an entire school of mathematics in what is sometimes called game theory that measures the probabilities of a particular event occurring out of a particular number or sequence of events. For example, when you toss a coin, it will come down heads 50% of the time, and it will come down tails 50% of the time. If you toss the coin 10 times or 1,000 times, there's still a 50-50 probability of the coin coming down heads or tails. The probabilities simply don't change, although it can't be predicted what will happen on each individual coin toss. In the 1950s, the likelihood of dying in a plane crash in the United States was approximately 1 in 1 million flights. With the dramatic increases in air safety that have taken place in the last three decades, the likelihood of your dying in a plane crash in the United States is now 1 in 11 million flights. We still can't predict which airplane will crash, but we know that the likelihood of your being injured or killed in a plane crash is extremely low, almost equivalent to the likelihood of your winning a state lottery or being struck by lightning. Gambling casinos are designed and built on certain probabilities of the house winning at each game. Blackjack, for example, is the game that offers the greatest probabilities in favor of the gambler, about 45%. This means that in blackjack, the house will win 55% of the time. Now, gambling casinos never go out of business because of losses, but countless gamblers go home broke because of this small percentage difference in probabilities. The first part of the law of probability simply says that you can increase the probability of an event occurring by increasing the number of events. This is so obvious as to not even require discussion, but many people overlook it. For example, the president of Amoco Petroleum, a company with a long record of finding more gas and oil than competing petroleum companies, was once asked why it was that his company was so much more successful than his competitors. He replied by pointing out that all the companies have access to the same data and use pretty much the same geologists and geophysicists and oil engineers with pretty much the same abilities. The simple reason why Amoco Petroleum was more successful than its rivals was because, he said, we drill more holes. There was no miracle. They simply increased the quantity of wells they drilled and thereby increased the quantity of proven and probable gas and oil reserves that they discovered. The second part of the law of probability says that probabilities increase with persistence. The longer you persist in a string of failure experiences or negative experiences or events, the more likely it is that you're going to get lucky. There's a poem entitled Don't Quit, which has the lines, "And you never can tell how close you are. It may be near when it seems so far." The most successful people are those who seem to persist in the face of all adversity, long after the average person would have given up, and sure enough, by the law of probability, things start to go their way. They get their lucky break. The third part of this law says that you are your own umpire in the ball game of life. What this means simply is that you are the batter at the plate swinging at each pitch in the ball game of life. In a normal baseball game, if you swing and miss three times, you'd be out. However, in your own personal ball game, you are also your own umpire, and only you can call yourself out. You can continue to swing as long and as hard as you want, and you're never out until you decide to be out. The second law of luck is the law of clarity, which says that the clearer you are about what you want and what you're willing to do to get it, the greater is the probability that you'll experience luck. It's been said that the two keys to great success in America are, first, being clear about what you want, and second, being clear about the price you're going to have to pay to get it. Well, personally, I'm a strong believer in the subject of clarity. I believe that people are happy or unhappy to the degree to which they're clear about the key issues of their lives. Most problems seem to come from lack of clarity. The first part of the law of clarity says that intensely desired goals activate your reticular cortex and make you aware of opportunities you might have overlooked. If you decide to lose weight, you begin to see all kinds of articles and information on diet, exercise, and weight loss. If you decide to earn more money, you begin to notice all kinds of possibilities for reducing your costs and increasing your income. The second part of the law of clarity says that the more you want something, the more alert you will be to your chance to achieve it when it comes. The law of clarity is closely aligned with intensity of desire and purpose, both of which make you much more sensitive to the chance word or remark that may help you. For example, some years ago, a friend of mine graduated from university in a medium-sized town in one of the western states. He got the idea that if he were to go to a place such as New York, he might discover a new business opportunity that he could bring back with him that hadn't yet been introduced into his city. Against the advice of others, he purchased a plane ticket and flew east. During the 4-hour flight, he got into a conversation with a man sitting next to him. It turned out that this man was a business development officer for a large franchise organization who had been out to his city looking for a franchisee. He'd been unsuccessful and was on his way home. The franchise turned out to be Orange Julius. When my friend asked him about his business and he got the details, he became so excited that he signed the franchise agreement right there on the plane. When they got off the plane together, my friend turned around and went back home on the next return flight. As a result of that chance meeting, which took place because he was so clear about what he was looking for, he went on to rent the last space in a new shopping center and subsequently built an extremely successful business. This business generated the cash flow that financed a series of other business investments, which made him a millionaire by the time he was 25. Now, there are countless stories like this that have their roots in clarity, purpose, and desire. They all increase the incidence of luck. The third law of luck is the law of attraction, which I've mentioned in several sessions and which is very much at work in the area of luck. To repeat, it says that you inevitably attract into your life the people, ideas, circumstances, and resources that harmonize with your dominant thoughts. Because of this law, whatever you can hold in your mind on a continuing basis, you can have. The only limitations on your successes are the limitations you place on your own thinking. The first part of the law of attraction, as it applies to luck, simply says that what you want, wants you. When you begin to think about something that you intensely desire, you magnetize this thought and you begin to send out waves of mental energy that connect with resources that are in harmony with your thinking. These resources then tend to be attracted to you when you're clear about what you want. The second part of the law of attraction says that what you are moving toward is moving toward you. By the law of accelerating acceleration, when you begin to think repeatedly about something that you want, you begin almost imperceptibly to move toward it, and wherever it is, it begins to move toward you. This is one of the secrets of great riches in America. The fourth law of luck is the law of expectations, which I mentioned earlier in a different context. With regard to luck, it says that you can increase the amount of luck in your life by continually expecting lucky things to happen. You know that there's something remarkable about your attitude of positive self-expectancy. It actually causes things to happen in a manner consistent with what you expect. It's called the self-fulfilling prophecy, and it's one of the most dependable and predictable of all mental phenomena. You'll find that lucky and successful people are always saying things like, "Don't worry, something will turn up," no matter what kind of problems they're faced with. In fact, an attitude of calmness, clarity, and self-assurance seems to create a mental climate that triggers positive events happening into your life. The first part of the law of expectation says that you should look for the opportunity in every situation. You've heard it said that the word crisis is written in Chinese in two characters, one of which means danger and the other of which means opportunity. A crisis can therefore be looked upon as a dangerous opportunity, something which, if properly approached, can be turned to your advantage and can enable you to leap ahead rapidly. For example, Many people lose their jobs through layoffs, mergers, and acquisitions, and even being fired. The loss of a job is often devastating, and some people take many months to recover from it and get back into the workforce. However, almost every great success in America was preceded by the unexpected loss of a job. Many self-made millionaires in America, in looking back, are extremely thankful that their previous job came to an end. They recognize that if they'd stayed there, they would never have achieved the success that they have. They were able to turn a crisis into an opportunity by looking for the good in the situation. And so can you. The second part of the law of expectation says that whenever God sends you a gift, He wraps it up in a problem. This comes from Dr. Norman Vincent Peale. He says that the bigger the gift that you're being sent, the bigger the problem it will be wrapped up in. The low performer tends to focus on the problem, while the high performer tends to look past and through the problem for the gift or opportunity that it might contain. And the remarkable thing is, whatever you look for, that's what you'll find. If you look for the good or the gift or the opportunity, you certainly find it. The third part of the law of expectations is that you get what you expect if you expect it long enough. Nature seems to put each of us to a test to see just how serious we really are about achieving the kind of success that we say we want. And the test is one of adversity and disappointment. The great majority of people collapse when things go wrong for them for any period of time. They demonstrate by their actions that they don't really believe the success they want is possible for them. The small minority of high achievers, however, are those who continue to expect the best and continue to expect that something good will come out of every difficulty. And in the long run, they're seldom disappointed. The fifth law of luck is the law of opportunity, which says that your greatest possibilities will come from the most common situations. Many people have a tendency to look for their opportunities to come from some great distance or as the result of some remarkable stroke of good fortune. The fact is that most of your opportunities will lie very closely at hand. They're usually contained in your own background and experience, your own education and training, your own business or industry. Sometimes the opportunities you're seeking are within your current interests and hobbies. They'll almost invariably utilize your existing talents and abilities. Very often, your opportunity comes by looking around you at the simplest things that are happening in your work. The first part of the law of opportunity says that opportunities usually come dressed in work clothes. An opportunity seldom comes fully developed. Usually, it looks like a lot of hard work with no guarantee of success at the end. Sometimes, a person will be offered a new job or a second income opportunity. He might turn it down because he says he's waiting for his big chance and he doesn't want to get his hands tied up. Often, someone will offer a person a book or an audio cassette program, and the person will refuse to read it or listen to it without realizing that it could contain the key ideas that could set him or her on the road to riches. The second part of the law of opportunity says that a wise person will create more opportunities than he finds. Better yet, the smart person will seize the opportunities by applying himself to normal, everyday events and will create opportunities that no one else sees. One of the richest men in America came up with the idea that there was oil in large pools in Texas and Oklahoma, several thousand feet below the surface and several thousand feet below the shallower oil fields that had already been tapped out. He bought up oil leases inexpensively and invested every dollar he could beg or borrow into his idea. He turned out to be right, and he struck huge quantities of oil by drilling deeper than anyone else ever had before. He became one of the richest men in the world as a result. He made his opportunity when most other people told him that there was no more oil down there to be found. The third part of the law of opportunity says that opportunities are like buses. There will always be another one along. This particular part of the law of opportunity also says that you need not be stampeded into acting at a rate or speed with which you're uncomfortable. Often, It's better to let an opportunity go past and wait for the next one than to risk losing everything. Long-term money is patient money. The sixth law of luck is the law of ability, which says that luck is when preparedness meets opportunity. The first part of the law of ability says that the greater your ability in any area, the more luck you'll experience in that area. Earl Nightingale once said that if you received an opportunity for which you weren't prepared and you tried to seize it anyway, you would only look foolish. By the law of attraction, whatever abilities you develop in yourself, you'll eventually get your opportunity to use those abilities to the fullest. Your job is to develop them in the first place. Your job is to soak yourself in every kind of information possible that might help you to achieve your goals when the time is right. Sooner or later, you'll get your chance. The second part of the law of ability says that it's not enough to be in the right place at the right time. You must be the right person in the right place at the right time. Over and over, when we look at men and women who have achieved major breakthroughs as a result of what appears to be luck, we find that those breakthroughs were preceded by weeks and months and often many years of painstaking preparation and study that enabled the individual to be prepared when the door of opportunity opened. The seventh law of luck is the law of integrative complexity. This law says that the person with the widest variety of knowledge and skills in any area will tend to experience the most luck in that area. The individual who eventually dominates and wins in any situation will be the individual who is capable of combining together the greatest number of bits of information and knowledge into a coherent pattern upon which he can make decisions and take action. Sometimes knowing just one additional piece of information can be the turning point for you. During the Civil War, General Robert E. Lee of the Army of Northern Virginia was said to have this kind of mind, the highest level of integrative complexity of any general on either side, Union or Confederate. As a result, he was able to defeat every general in every army that was ever sent against him. He said that the only thing that he really feared was that the Northern forces under Abraham Lincoln would finally field a general who could think better and faster than he could. Well, General Ulysses S. Grant was deemed to be the only general that the North ever put in command of an army against Lee who had a level of integrative complexity developed to the same height. Within a year after Grant taking over as commander of all the Union forces, the Confederacy was in ruins, the South was defeated, and the war was over. You can develop ever higher levels of integrative complexity by continually adding to your store of knowledge. The first part of the law of integrative complexity says that the more you know, the more you grow. In fact, the more you learn, the more you're capable of learning. The more you work on your mind, the better and stronger your mind becomes. The second part of this law says that the wider the net you throw, the bigger will be your catch. Again, the law of integrative complexity, continually gathering more and more knowledge, simply increases the probabilities that you'll have the specific information or the specific insight that will enable you to turn a situation to your advantage. Fear is and always has been the greatest enemy of mankind. It's only when you conquer fear that your mind opens up to all the possibilities that lie around you. The eighth law of luck is the law of assumption, and it's something we've also talked about before. It says that incorrect assumptions lie at the root of every failure. Let me repeat. The major reason that people don't get the results that they desire is because they're acting on incorrect assumptions. Whenever you assume something to be true, you also assume that it has a certain degree of predictive validity, that acting on that assumption will allow you to achieve certain objectives. If you don't get what you expect, the very first thing that you must do is question your assumptions. This brings us to the first part of the law of assumption, which says, the continuing assumption that you could be dead wrong is the key to getting it dead right. One of my favorite quotes is from Oliver Cromwell in his address to the British Parliament when he said, in frustration, I beseech thee, gentlemen, in the bowels of Christ, to consider it possible that you could be wrong. What he was trying to do was get them to open their minds to a wider range of probabilities and explanations for the current situation. Unfortunately, many people tend to slip into a mental comfort zone and become inflexible in their thinking. However, luck comes from allowing your mind to roam freely over all the possibilities of a situation. Consider that the correct thing to do might be the exact opposite of what you're doing right now. Luck often comes from being open to such possibilities, from challenging your assumptions. The second part of this law says that questioning your assumptions will enable you to see possibilities that you might not have dreamed of. This is the hallmark of the adaptive, fluid, and flexible person. This is the divergent thinker. This is the person who speculates and who's willing to be childish, even ridiculous, in throwing out suggestions. One of the best questions that you can ask is, why? Why are we doing it this way? Could there be a better way? Should we be doing it at all? If there were a better way, what might it be? The ninth law of luck is the law of timing, which is best summarized by the line from Shakespeare in Julius Caesar, where it says, "There is a tide in the affairs of men which, when taken at the flood, leads on to fortune." Time is a fundamental part of luck or opportunity. There is both a too soon and a too late in all of human affairs. Men and women who are described as lucky are invariably those who recognize when the time is right and move swiftly. In so doing, they sometimes save themselves months and years of hard work. The first part of the law of timing says that timing is everything. It also says that, because of the law of attraction, you'll get what you are meant to get when you're ready and not before. The second part of the law of timing comes from Woody Allen, who said, 80% of success is just showing up. Therefore, many successful people make a habit of being in as many places as possible so as to increase the probabilities of being in the right place at the right time. The third part of the law of timing says that the more often you try, the more likely it is that you will triumph. You can put the law of averages to work in your favor by increasing the number of times that you attempt to achieve any goal. The tenth law of luck is the law of energy, which says that the greater your energy and enthusiasm, the more likely you will be to recognize and respond to luck. It's been proven many times that the more energetic you are, the more likely it is that you experience lucky occasions. Luck requires both having the opportunity and responding quickly to that opportunity, and this requires energy. The first part of this law says that alertness enables you to see roses where others only see thorns. When you are rested, refreshed, and alert, when you're physically fit in mind and body, you're much more likely to see possibilities that escape most other people. The second part of the law of energy says that presence of mind and speed of action can turn ordinary events into stepping stones to success. Many men and women have changed the courses of their lives by seizing an opportunity quickly when it arose. Sometimes it was with careful thought, and sometimes it was simply spontaneous. But the fact was that they had high energy and they acted or spoke quickly when the chance occurred. Very often, your great piece of luck can come after a string of setbacks and disappointments. The law of probability says that you're entitled to a lucky break if you've had a series of unlucky occurrences. Be ready for the tide to turn so that you can move with it quickly when it does. The third part of the law of energy says that when the night becomes darkest, the stars come out. When things seem to be the very worst, if you bide your time and await your chance, your opportunity will sometimes occur. Be ready to seize it and respond quickly. During the darkest days of World War II, members of Winston Churchill's cabinet were urging him to make peace with Hitler. He refused to do so and insisted instead that something would happen to bring America into the war if they just held on long enough. Even though Franklin D. Roosevelt had won the presidency in 1940 by promising not to involve the United States in another war in Europe, Churchill absolutely believed that something would happen that would change everything, if he held on long enough. And on December 7, 1941, the Japanese, on the other side of the world, launched a surprise attack on Pearl Harbor. When Adolf Hitler heard about the surprise attack, he had to ask one of his generals where Pearl Harbor was located. He had no idea of the geography of the Pacific. But nevertheless, in a fit of excitement, Hitler, for no obvious reason, declared war on the United States. The next morning, Franklin D. Roosevelt went before the U.S. Congress and declared war on Japan, calling it a day of infamy. And, by the way, he said, because of the declaration by Germany, he was also declaring war on Germany, and from that moment on, America would be supporting England. Winston Churchill had turned out to be right once again. His luck had turned. The 11th law of luck is the law of relationships as it applies to luck. It says that the number of people you know and who know you will determine your luck as much as any other factor. The first part of this law is that most luck comes with hair on top. Most of your luck arises from the contacts that you have with other people and from the decision or desire of other people to help you. The second part of the law of relationship says that chance remarks can change the direction of your life. A most remarkable thing about luck is that it is often contained in comments from friendly strangers who you meet in passing. Sometimes a person will make an observation or pass along a fact that is the critical part of the puzzle you're trying to solve. Mark Twain once wrote that his whole life was changed when a piece of paper containing a short essay blew against his leg when he was walking down the streets of Hannibal, Missouri, as a young man. He picked up the paper which someone had dropped and read it, and it changed him forever. Sometimes someone can suggest that you read a book or take a course or meet a particular person. Pay particular attention to these inputs. Remember, what you want wants you. Your luck will often appear in the guise of a stranger. Be alert and sensitive to the fact that luck is often very playful and comes to you in a joking manner from a direction that you least expect. Keep an open mind and be willing to pursue these chance circumstances. The third part of the law of relationships, as it applies to luck, is that when the student is ready, the master will appear. This is another example of the laws of attraction and expectation and cause and effect and a whole lot of other laws. It says that when you develop a divine discontent and you're sincerely committed to changing and improving your life, someone will appear, either in the form of a book, an audio tape, a course, or a teacher, and will give you the critical piece of information that you need at that time. The 12th law of luck is the law of empathy. It says that if you can see the situation through the eyes of the other person, your perspective can reveal unseen possibilities. This is especially true in the world of business, of sales, and all personal relationships. Stephen Covey says, "Seek first to understand, then to be understood." Make every effort to view the situation from the perspective of the other person, and you'll often see things you would have missed otherwise. The first part of the law of empathy is the old Indian saying, which says, "Walk a mile in the other person's moccasins." When you develop a deep sense of empathy for the problems, difficulties, and needs of other people, you'll often see how you can satisfy them in a way that no one has ever thought of before. The second part of the law of empathy, which is a key to success in business, says simply that if you can see John Jones through John Jones' eyes, you can sell John Jones what John Jones buys. Ask yourself, what is his perspective? What does this person see? What does this person want, and what is he willing to pay for? When you put all these different laws together, the laws of probability, clarity, purpose, attraction, expectation, opportunity, ability, integrative complexity, courage, timing, energy, relationships, and empathy, you begin to realize that luck is largely predictable, and you can dramatically increase the incidence of it that you enjoy in your life. you can bring the powers and forces of nature together to work for you in a constructive and positive way to help you achieve your goals. Luck and good fortune increase in every area of your life if you'll simply do the things that we've discussed and develop the qualities practiced by other lucky and successful people. Good luck. Perhaps your greatest responsibility to yourself and your most important job in life is to become everything you're capable of becoming and to realize your full potential as a human being. It's to achieve your personal best and to become the very best person that you can be in every area of your life. True happiness and lasting satisfaction only comes to you when you feel that you're living your life to the fullest, that you're working on the outer edge of your capabilities, and that you're stretching yourself to become more than you've ever been in the past. Throughout this program, I've introduced you to a series of laws and principles that are timeless and applicable to virtually every area of your life. Some of these laws have been repeated in different ways and with different applications. These laws largely explain what happens to you or what fails to happen to you. Some of these laws are general and affect virtually every area of your life, like the law of cause and effect. Some are more particular and are often specific to a single activity or area of endeavor, like money or wealth creation. One of the most important of the laws that I've talked about is the law of belief. Your beliefs have such an inordinate impact on your thinking that you don't believe so much what you see, but you see what you believe. Your beliefs form the master program of your subconscious computer, and you can seldom exceed your deeply held convictions concerning your own capabilities. You can very rarely do more than you think you can, or be more than you believe you can. The wonderful thing is that because of the law of reversibility, by taking actions consistent with the beliefs about yourself that you want to have, the actions themselves have a backflow effect that causes you to believe in that way. This itself is a core principle of self-fulfillment. The law of expectation says that whatever you expect with confidence becomes your own self-fulfilling prophecy. You live out your true expectations in virtually everything that you say and do. The law of correspondence says that your outer world tends to be a mirror of your inner world. What you see on the outside of your life is largely a reflection of what's going on the inside. Perhaps the most powerful law of all is what we can call the law of the universe, the law of superconscious activity, which says that any thought, plan, goal, or idea that you can hold continuously in your conscious mind must be brought into reality by your superconscious mind. If you absolutely believe that something is possible for you and you hold to that belief tenaciously, you activate the entire power of the universe behind your chosen dreams and goals. You can then go on to accomplish more in a short time than many people accomplish in a lifetime. In this session, I'll explain to you 13 additional laws of self-fulfillment and how they work in your life. Applying any of these laws or any combination of them will help you to have and do and be more than you ever could without them. The first law of fulfillment is the law of growth. This law states that if you're not growing, you're stagnating. Change is the only constant factor in life. You can avoid taxes by not working, and you can avoid death for a long time by taking excellent care of your physical health. But we're all caught up in the turbulence of continuous change, and the successful men and women of today and tomorrow are what is called change masters. It's only when you learn to welcome change, embrace change, and continually grow from change that you free yourself from the danger of being bowled over or brushed aside by changes over which you have little control. All progress and improvement requires change. One of the reasons why I've emphasized the importance of clear goals throughout this program is that goals enable you to control the direction of change. Goals assure that change is predominantly positive and constructive. If change is unavoidable and inevitable, you want to be sure that whatever changes are taking place are helping you in some way. And this requires goals. The second law of self-fulfillment is the law of practice, which says, whatever you practice over and over again often enough becomes a new habit. You can control your destiny and the kind of person you become with this law. Your entire evolution and growth as a human being is dependent upon the fact that your character is not fixed in place. It's fluid and capable of growth and development. You can become what you want to become. With practice, you can develop the habit of arising early in the morning and planning your day thoroughly before you begin. You can develop the habit of self-discipline. You can develop the habit of aggressiveness and purposefulness and whatever else you desire. The first part of the law of practice is a peak performance technique entitled mental rehearsal. This technique is used by the top athletes, top business people, and virtually all high-achieving men and women in our society. The principle of mental rehearsal says that you can develop any habit pattern of action or behavior you desire by practicing it in your mind repeatedly prior to the situation that requires it. For example, if you have an upcoming meeting with your boss or banker, you can go through the entire meeting mentally and practice being calm, confident, and relaxed throughout. The second part of the law of practice says that the more relaxed you are when you visualize a new behavior, the more rapidly it's accepted by your subconscious mind, and the more rapidly you begin acting consistent with your mental picture. This law of practice and the need to mentally rehearse in a deeply relaxed state is called autogenic conditioning or autosuggestion. It's perhaps the most powerful peak performance technique available to you without training, and all you have to do to use it is to create a mental movie of exactly how you want a particular situation to work out. Play that movie over and over again in your mind prior to the situation, and you'll be amazed at how often everything happens exactly the way you imagined. The third part of the law of practice says that you must launch new habits and behaviors strongly. Never allow an exception before the new habit is fully entrenched. Once you decide to utilize the law of practice and develop a new behavior or attitude to override or replace an old behavior or attitude that you no longer desire, you must discipline yourself to stay with it until the new habit is firmly in place. For example, if you decide to get up at 6 a.m. every morning, you must force yourself to do it over and over again until you actually wake up automatically at 6 a.m. and you can't get back to sleep. This isn't easy in any area, but it can make a tremendous difference to the level of self-fulfillment that you enjoy in your life. The third law of self-fulfillment is the law of accumulation, which says that every great life is an accumulation of hundreds and thousands of efforts and sacrifices that no one else either sees or appreciates. I've discussed this law before, and with regard to your being all you can be, it's absolutely essential. We all start off with limited knowledge and limited resources, and it's only through the long, hard process of accumulation, like a snowball gathering snowflakes as it rolls down a hill, that we build ourselves up to the point where we're capable of fulfilling our dreams and aspirations. This law also says that no worthwhile effort or sacrifice is ever lost. You may have to work for many weeks or months or even years before you begin to see the results of this process of accumulation. But every good thing that you do, every extra effort that you make is accumulating and becoming part of your character and part of your future. In an earlier session, I talked about the importance of time perspective, of taking the long view with regard to your life and being willing to make short-term sacrifices for long-term gains. Other people will often try to discourage you and dissuade you and get you to put off these efforts in favor of having fun in the present, but you must ignore them and persevere regardless. The law of accumulation is another iron law of individual success and personal fulfillment, and anyone who violates it ends up paying the price by living a life far below his or her capabilities. The fourth law of self-fulfillment is the law of incremental improvement. This is a sub-law of the law of accumulation. It says that mastery and excellence in any field is the result of countless efforts of self-development over an extended period of time. This law simply says that you need to invest countless hours of working on yourself and on your profession or occupation to gradually work yourself up to the point where you begin to enjoy the big rewards. No matter where you start, your future potential is unlimited using this law of incremental improvement. It's the key to self-fulfillment because happiness in life is a journey, not a destination. As I said before, happiness is the progressive, step-by-step realization of a worthy ideal. A feeling of personal growth towards something that's important to you is the root cause of individual motivation, enthusiasm, and excitement about life. The first part of the law of accumulation comes from the great Polish pianist Paderewski, who became the Prime Minister of Poland. Even with a busy schedule, he practiced on the piano for 3 hours every day. When he was asked why it was he continued to practice, even though he was recognized as one of the finest pianists in Europe, he replied with these classic words. He said, "If I don't practice for even one day, I know the difference. If I don't practice for 2 days, the critics know the difference. And if I don't practice for 3 days, the public knows the difference." It's always obvious to anyone who's looking whether or not you're engaged in this ongoing process of incremental improvement. The comedian and actor George Burns has been doing his comedy routine since the days of vaudeville back in the 20s. He's booked on a regular basis to perform before large audiences. Yet, prior to every single performance, he spends one solid hour of review and rehearsal alone in his dressing room, even though he's done the same material hundreds, if not thousands, of times. He's always working on it to keep it fresh and to improve it in some way. The second part of the law of incremental improvement is what I call Longfellow's Law. This comes from the immortal words of the poet Henry Wadsworth Longfellow, who said, "Those heights by great men won and kept were not achieved by sudden flight, but they, while their companions slept, were toiling upward in the night." The fifth law of self-fulfillment is the law of self-development. This law says that you can become whatever you want in life if you will just learn what you need to know in order to achieve it. Just imagine, you don't have to be envious of the accomplishments of anyone else in the world. Whatever anyone else has done that you sincerely wish to do yourself, you can learn to do if you simply apply yourself long enough and hard enough. By the law of self-development, you can raise yourself by your own bootstraps to any height that you desire. Now, here's an exercise for you. Project yourself forward in time and see yourself living your ideal lifestyle, surrounded by the kind of people and work and material things that you most desire. From this mental vantage point in the future, look back to the present day, to where you are right now, and imagine the steps you might have taken and the things you would have had to learn in order to get to where you want to be. This exercise is amazingly effective in clarifying for you the things that you're going to have to do and become starting today to get to wherever you want to go in the future. Just give it a try. The sixth law of self-fulfillment is the law of talents. It says that your greatest opportunities lie in the development and exploitation of your inborn talents and abilities. You don't need to become a different person or to develop different capabilities. You merely need to dig deep down into the gold mine of your own potentials, and you will find riches enough to build any kind of life you might want for yourself. The first part of the law of talents is what I call Gardner's observation, after Howard Gardner at the University of Harvard and his work on human potential. It says simply, you are a genius. Because of the unique structure of your brain, You have the capacity to perform at exceptional levels in an area that interests you so much that you become totally absorbed by your activities in that area. Howard Gardner has demonstrated that there are at least 7 major forms of intelligence, and that each person is blessed with a combination of these different forms of intelligence, the proper use of which can make you unstoppable. The second part of the law of talents is the parable of Jesus, where he talks about talents and says, "O good and faithful servant, you have been faithful over small things, I will make you master over many things." This is another way of saying that as you stretch your existing talents and abilities, you'll be given ample opportunities to use even more of them. The third part of the law of talents is what I call Rohn's recommendation from business philosopher Jim Rohn, who says, "If you work on your gifts, they will make way for you." This is a wonderful truth tied into the law of talents. If you really go to work on the innate abilities that you've identified already, your capabilities will begin to expand and enable you to embrace all kinds of other opportunities. The fourth part of the law of talents is what I call Rothschild's revision, after Baron de Rothschild, who became one of the world's wealthiest men by practicing certain principles in his own business life. His original rule was, make no useless acquaintances. And my revision of this rule simply says, learn no useless subjects or skills. Remember, all you really have to trade is your time. You trade time for the kind of life you'll enjoy in the future. Therefore, refuse to spend hours or weeks learning a subject simply because it's fun and enjoyable. Instead, use those same hours to develop your talents and abilities, to develop yourself personally and professionally, and to activate the laws of accumulation and incremental improvement so that you become an outstanding human being. The 7th law of self-fulfillment is the law of excellence. This was best stated by Vince Lombardi when he said, "The quality of your life will be determined by the depth of your commitment to excellence more than by any other factor." No one could have said it better. The foundation of a great life is for you to achieve excellence at doing something that's important to you. It's only when you're really good at what you're doing that you feel like a winner, that you enjoy high self-esteem and a tremendous feeling of self-respect and self-fulfillment. Conversely, you can't feel very good about yourself by simply doing a job in an average or mediocre way. Your aim should be to be outstanding at the important things you do. If you're in sales, your goal should be to be among the top 20% of salespeople in your field. If you're already there, you should aim to be in the top 10%, as defined solely by income. The first part of the law of excellence comes from Emile Coué. It's a paraphrase of his famous advice, which was, "Every day and every way I'm getting better and better." Just as he taught the patients in his clinic to say these words, you should be saying to yourself, "Every day and every way I'm getting better and better in my chosen field." And if you're not getting better and better, then reorganize your life so that you read books, attend courses, and listen to audio tapes until you do. The second part of the law of excellence comes from John Palmer of the National Speakers Bureau, who was once asked what it took to get ahead in a competitive field. He replied with these wonderful words. He said, "Get good, get better, be the best." Never be satisfied with anything less than being at the top. As Vince Lombardi also said, "Winning is not a sometime thing, it's an all-the-time thing." The third part of the law of excellence comes from Bear Bryant of the University of Alabama, the great football coach, who said, "It's not the will to win that counts as much as the will to prepare to win." He noticed in coaching winning football teams that virtually everybody wanted to win, but that only a few players wanted it badly enough to put in the exhaustive preparation necessary to be ready to win. Everybody wants to be the best, but very few people are willing to make all the efforts necessary to be the best. If you decide to be the best, and you combine that with the necessary work, nothing can stop you. The 8th law of self-fulfillment is the law of opportunity. This version comes from Napoleon Hill, who discovered, after a lifetime of research on success that within every setback or obstacle there lies the seed of an equal or greater benefit or opportunity. He found that the most successful men and women lived their lives by this law and took every setback as a spur to greater effort. The first part of the law of opportunity refers to your level of confidence, and it says that the more confidence you have in your ultimate ability to succeed, the more boldly you will act on opportunities when they arise. When you tune your mind to success and develop a prosperity consciousness, when you begin to apply the law of abundance to the world around you, you'll see more opportunities than you can possibly take advantage of. And the very fact of having the confidence that everything that you're doing is propelling you towards your goals will cause you to make more progress than other people around you. The second part of the law of opportunity refers back to the law of reversibility, which says that just as your feelings dictate your thoughts and actions, your actions have a reverse effect and create your thoughts and feelings. If you want to be enthusiastic, pretend that you're already enthusiastic, and the pretense will soon generate the emotion of enthusiasm and excitement. You'll be amazed at how many more opportunities you become aware of just by acting as though you expect to discover them. The ninth law of self-fulfillment is what I earlier called the law of courage. It says in this context that if you confront the thing you fear, then the death of fear is certain. The greatest single obstacle to self-fulfillment is and always has been fear combined with ignorance. It's fear of failure, fear of criticism, fear of poverty, fear of losing, fear of disapproval, and every other kind of fear that acts as a brake on your becoming the kind of person you want to become. One of the characteristics of men and women with leadership qualities is that they always turn toward the things they fear, and in so doing, face them down. They never avoid fearful situations or people. They look upon fear as an enemy to be challenged, to be confronted and dealt with, rather than to be evaded and ignored. The first part of this law of courage comes from the movie Dead Poets Society. This movie, starring Robin Williams, emphasized the importance of the Latin saying, carpe diem, which means seize the day. The second part of the law of courage says, act as if it were impossible to fail, and it shall be. You can actually develop the courage that makes you unstoppable by simply forcing yourself, disciplining yourself to act courageously, even when deep down inside you don't feel like it. There seems to be a direct relationship between your willingness to face the disapproval of strangers and your ability to get ahead. If you're single and you see an attractive member of the opposite sex you'd like to meet, just walk up and introduce yourself. If you're in sales, you can overcome the fear that holds many salespeople back by simply forcing yourself to go out and call on new prospects until the fear finally disappears. In every case, you'll feel far better about yourself when you confront your fears squarely and move ahead confidently in the direction of your dreams. The tenth law of self-fulfillment is the law of applied effort. It says that all great achievement is preceded and accompanied by hard, hard work. Dr. Thomas Stanley's research into the lifestyles of thousands of affluent Americans found that virtually every one of them ascribed their success to the ability to work harder than anyone else. The first part of the law of applied effort is what I call Getty's principle. John Paul Getty became the richest man in the world of his time. He was a millionaire by the age of 23 and a billionaire 2 decades later. When he was asked the secret of his success, he replied with just 2 words. He said, "Try harder." The journalist asked him what he would do if that didn't work, and he replied simply that he would try harder still. Almost all things are amenable to hard work. If you're not getting the results that you want, simply try harder. It's been said that the very best sales are those that come at the end of the longest day, at the end of the longest street, to the very last person you call on. It seems to be that when you work well beyond what anyone could expect, you really feel the best about yourself and you really start to get results. The second part of this law of applied effort is simply this. Work all the time you work. Don't view your work and see it as a social occasion or a place to fool around. Be serious. Don't drop off your dry cleaning, pick up your groceries, or wash your car. Don't talk on the telephone with your friends and family, and don't socialize around the water cooler. Get a reputation instead for being the kind of person who works all the time he works. Try it and see. You'll be amazed at the results. The 11th law of self-fulfillment is the law of giving. Again, quoting the Bible, this law states that it is more blessed to give than to receive. It's also more profitable as well. Life today belongs to the go-giver rather than the go-getter. All around you, you'll see both givers and takers, and you'll find that the givers are the most popular and the most successful in everything they do and wherever they go. The law of giving is tied into the law of service, which says that you can only achieve real meaning and purpose in life to the degree to which you feel that you're serving other people in some way. The first part of the law of giving is that the only gift worth giving is that which includes the giver as part of it. It's the part of yourself that you attach to any gift that makes the gift valuable. A favorite stone given by a child is a far more important gift than something given out of obligation or with indifference. The second part of the law of giving is that the more of yourself that you give without expectation of return, the greater will be your return, often from the most unexpected sources. Almost everyone has discovered that when they give of themselves to others, good things happen to them and come back to them from the most unexpected directions. It's a basic rule that the person you help in some way is never the person that pays you back. It's often someone else who helps you at a different time and place and in a different way. But it was the initial willingness to give of yourself that created this force field of energy that led to someone else helping you when you were in need. The third part of the law of giving is called the principle of reciprocity, which says that whenever you give or do something nice for another person, you trigger within that person the desire to reciprocate for your action or kindness. Since none of us wants to feel under obligation to another, when someone does something nice for us, we feel a need to do something nice back to even the score. Therefore, the smart person is the person who's always looking for ways to do things for others, knowing that it will inevitably come back, and sometimes in far greater measure than what was put out. The fourth part of giving has to do with the timing of a gift. A single rose given at the right time can be worth a dozen roses given too late. One of my favorite quotes is in the words, "I shall pass this way but once. Any kindness that I can do, let me do it now without delay or reservation, for I shall not pass this way again." The 12th law of self-fulfillment is the law of affirmation. This law states that whatever you repeat to yourself often enough will eventually be accepted by your subconscious mind as a fact and will become a part of your beliefs. By affirming to yourself over and over any dream, desire, or goal that you wish, you eventually come to believe it and accept it as an inevitable truth for you. At that point, it takes on a force of its own and begins moving you irresistibly towards it and it toward you. The law of affirmation is based on what we call the three P's. The first P stands for present tense. I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. The second P stands for personal. You always use the word I rather than the word you or we or they. You say, I like myself, I like myself, I like myself. And the third P stands for positive. Always phrase your affirmations in the positive tense. You can say, I feel terrific, rather than, I will feel terrific tomorrow. Your subconscious mind can only be accessed by words that are programmed in the personal, present, and positive tense. The first part of the law of affirmation is that the most powerful words of all are the ones you say to yourself and believe. The more often you repeat them to yourself and the more emotionally you say them, the more you believe them to be true. The more you believe them, the more of an impact they'll have on your thinking and your behavior. The second part of the law of affirmation is that the most powerful affirmation is a visualization. Whenever you visualize and combine that mental picture with the emotion of desire, it's passed rapidly as a command from your conscious mind to your subconscious mind, and it begins to activate the law of attraction, the law of expectation, the law of correspondence, and many other laws. What you see on the inside, you begin to experience on the outside. This is perhaps the most amazing power that a human being can have. The third part of the law of affirmation is simply that with affirmations, both verbal and visual, your potential is unlimited. And finally, the 13th law of self-fulfillment is the law of optimism, which says that a positive mental attitude is closely associated with success in virtually every area of life. The more positive and optimistic you are, the more constructive your thoughts and behaviors, the more likely it is that you will achieve greatly in everything you attempt. The first part of the law of optimism says that you think, feel, and act the way you do because of the way you interpret experiences and events to yourself. The way you talk to yourself about the way you think things are happening has an inordinate impact on how positive you feel. If you slip, however, and begin talking to yourself and explaining things to yourself in a negative way, it'll cast a pall of negativity and gloom over your whole personality. So watch your words and your inner dialogue. Be careful about your conversation and how you talk about how you feel about things that are happening around you. The second part of the law of optimism says that every thought, feeling, word, or action you engage in is a choice made by yourself for which you are totally responsible. Since no one can think and decide for you but yourself, you are completely responsible for the results of your thinking. Since no one controls your inner dialogue but yourself, the starting point of optimism and happiness is for you to think what you want to think and make sure that your thoughts are continually on the person that you want to be and the things that you want to accomplish. Let me leave you with this important idea. There are exceptions to many of these laws. Sometimes they seem not to work at all in the short term. It's easy for a person to challenge a law that might require him to change his thinking or his actions by pointing out the exceptions to the law and attempting to invalidate the law with the exceptions. This, unfortunately, is a method of crooked thinking. And it's harmful thinking in that it often leads a person away from the very things that he needs to know and practice to achieve the goals he's set for himself. The keys to mental well-being and happiness are a sense of control and a sense of coherence, which go hand in hand. You experience a sense of control to the degree to which you accept complete responsibility for being the cause of the effects in your life. Because these laws and principles explain the role your thinking plays in determining your life, they put you into the driver's seat. By virtue of the fact that you control your thinking and your thinking controls your life, you are the master of your own destiny. The best way to organize your life, just like the best way to drive your car, even though you can sometimes speed and not get caught, is to obey these laws and just confidently assume that they are continually at work. You now have the laws of the universe and the secrets of the ages. There is nothing that you cannot do and be if you make up your mind and then just do it.
You've been listening to the Universal Laws of Success and Achievement. Applying these laws in your life becomes easy if you listen to these tapes several times. As you've heard Brian Tracy tell you, once you align your goals with your values, you'll find that in critical moments of your life, the relevant law will come to mind, and you'll be able to take the right steps in the right direction. Ultimately, the laws of luck will always seem to work in your favor.